Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, October 30th, 2014. Tonight's main science topic, I will be getting back to talking primarily about the WING project, where it's going, what it's going to do, and in terms of scope, in terms of the world, this is an incredibly important project. Now, there are a number of people out there who are doing important work as far as privatizing major portions of our future. And I'll name a few of them here. One is a guy named Elon Musk. And I don't agree, well, you can't agree with all kinds of things that are going on. But a solar company called, I believe it's called Sun Solar, Solar Sun, something like that, out in California, started now, is growing nationwide, where they're installing solar panels and making options very affordable for people. That's excellent. Electric cars, something that should have been 100 years ago, you know, very nice electric cars, and then putting in a factory, planning a factory in Nevada where they will produce the cars, also building a battery factory that will drive down the price of batteries. A guy named Richard Branson, who has multiplied his wealth, okay, but he's using it. This week, they just started actually going into space with the Space 2 project, where they can take multiple people into space as a business. There are other companies that, by the way, Elon Musk has a SpaceX program, which I believe is on number 5, transportation to the International Space Station. And so privatizing that portion of space that the $20 billion a year NASA Space Agency can't do by themselves. In fact, they can't seem to do much of anything. Private corporations always have been much more efficient because they have to run in the real world. Things have to work. This past week, a company called Orbital lost a rocket that exploded on takeoff, attempting to take about 5,000 pounds of goods to the International Space Station. And apparently still investigating that. Who knows what happened? But just a quick note, using chemical vertical lift takeoff rockets is not the way to go into space. So, okay, so those are the positive things that are going on. In the background, I am working in quite a few of these areas myself. I have been for actually decades. If you read some of my work, the Atlantis to Tesla book talks about some of that and actually gives published papers that I had from the early 1980s dealing with the electromagnetic propulsion systems, the non-chemical, the non-inertial type of propulsion systems. Okay, so anyway, that's another issue. But there are companies that are designing hotels to go in space, other type of structures. Inflatable structures have been used. Innovation that has not been seen in decades, always coming way after the fact in the space program, the nationally funded space program, should be canceled. The whole issue of NASA, Tier 2 science, the few little projects that they have, the Mars rover, the other couple unmanned missions that they have, so they maybe produced some data, but all that data has been funneled through a few people with archaic, outdated ideas. But this is kind of setting a framework for what I want to talk about tonight regarding the World Energy Project. One thing I deal with, of course, is water filtration, clean water. And I'll tell you, I wish I had about 10 of me and I could divide my time on these projects that I'm working on, including one of the most important projects in the world, is water management. And we are strapped with governments that really don't have any clue of what they're doing. On top of that, we have organizations that are in the world, Coca-Cola, Nestle's, and many other private organizations who are buying water rights, who are really destroying the water situation in the world today. So just simply managing the fresh water that already exists is a very important topic. Okay, so those are important topics. I'm not going to talk any more about those tonight, but those are things that I happen to be working on in the background. Also, I have some exciting developments coming up in my work in mathematics. This is stuff that simply, it's actually gone past the drawing board stage. It's material that I've developed and gone way beyond what has been made public before. But it's a matter of actually getting it into a form that's presentable to the public. Let me just give an aside note on that. When the book Calculate Primes came out, it was a tremendous, difficult production effort. First of all, there was a book. Second of all, there was a three-hour DVD lecture. And third of all, I had to put this in a form that was palatable for the general public. Now, most mathematics at any kind of high level is in such esoteric form that only 10 or so people in the world can really read it and get a handle on it because there's so much background information. So when I solved the prime number problem, directly calculating prime numbers, I had to put it in a form that everybody could understand to publicly present it. And so, anyway, that was a huge effort, but it was well worth it, and now that provided the basis for further work, which goes way beyond that. And that is something that I had tried to come out with even last winter, but it just, there were too many other things on my plate. So, anyway, that's just another issue that's going on in the background. But water is very important. If we could just manage the fresh water that we already have, there would be no water shortage. There wouldn't be a drought in the American Southwest. We had a bumper crop of water in the entire northern states last year. And when it melted, it all ran down the Mississippi River and out into the eastern rivers and out into the ocean. Crazy. Absolutely insane. The waste and lack of planning for water management. Absolutely insane. But another issue, desalinization of water. We live on a water planet. Why is it costing people extravagant amounts of money to have water? We have lots of water. When the rain falls where you are, when you look up and you see those clouds and it's raining, that water came from the oceans. Nature has a way of evaporating that water with no salt content at all, brings it across, dumps it on the land, and if there were any salt in that at all, it would accumulate, and all of our land would be saline and not a thing would grow. So it's proof that nature's system of taking water from the oceans and distributing it on the land is a beautiful system. And so, two things. First of all, I showed back a long time ago, this work was solidified back in the mid-90s with the work I did with the Russian scientists on maneuvering storms from offshore and maneuvering them over land. That was part of the work was to maneuver hurricanes away from land to protect the land. This, anyway, that's a whole story unto itself. But to also be able to take weather systems and then bring them into land, that is one issue. Another issue is the, like I say, desalinization. A process, we have processes that can desalinate water. It's just that, for example, they're very expensive. The process to take all salts and minerals out of water, reverse osmosis it is called, is very expensive because it takes a lot of energy to pump the water through these microfine filters that remove the osmosis membranes. They're called, not really filters, they're membranes. And you have banks of these, so by the time the water goes through these enough times, you have removed all of the saline content of the water. But it takes energy, and that's where the wing systems come in, which is leading up to this energy issue, this distributed energy issue, is that in a lot of cases, reverse osmosis can be used to provide water for things like sewage or for washing clothes or washing dishes, etc. And so this is being used, but in a lot of places that are near the coastline. But the problem is there's still some residue salt in reverse osmosis. It doesn't take 100% out. It might take out 99.9% of the salt. And so you still get a little bit of salt content, so you can't use it to water your garden, for example. Because if you do, over time, that accumulated salt is going to cause problems for any kind of plant life. But water management is a very, very important issue in the world. So let's look at the major problems of the world. We have economic problems, would be solved in a day by getting rid of the Federal Reserve and the banking system in the United States. It is a debt banking system. It was what this country was founded to prevent, and it got back in 1913. And this has saddled this country with so much debt. The United States debt right now is higher than all the money in the world. I mean, there was I don't know if this is still an active serial in newspapers, it was called Lil Abner, L-I-L-L'IL, Lil Abner. And it took place down in the Smoky Mountains. And Lil Abner was kind of a figure. He was a character that lived down in the Smoky Mountains. And there was a guy in there. His name was General, Cornpole was his name. And there was an expression that he had. He used to say, "I have a simple child's dream to own all the money in the world." And so anyway, he was just a character in Lil Abner. Well, this is like the Rothschilds. They want all the money in the world, and they want everybody indebted to them. They control the court system in the United States. They control the banking system, the taxation system, the presidents, the Congress, the court system, the judicial, the legislative system, Congress, and the House of Representatives. And like most of those people say, they are just window dressing. They know that whatever they do, it might be this or that, or it might fix roads or something like that. But in general, they're just like necessary hardware in this illusion, this facade of democracy or republic that we supposedly live in. Okay, those are the economic issues. Physical issues, I talk about this in my book, The Diamond Principle. And that book is extremely important, The Diamond Principle. If you have it, pick it up and read it again. If you don't have it, you better get it and read it. It's a culmination of my earlier works, my earlier books, but it talks in general about the past, does an analysis on the past, and then does an analysis on the future. And it comes down to the fact that the population, especially the population of the United States, is really stupid. And are they stupid? No, there's many well-educated people out there, but they don't have a clue about what's really going on in the world. They have been educated in the public school system or even in private school systems, and they simply have no clue how this world operates. Scientists, in general, have no clue that the vast majority of them that you see in general life, they're working in the sciences, whether it's chemistry or physics or engineering or some form of manufacturing engineering, that they are part of what I call tier two science. And there's a whole layer of science and engineering above them of which they know nothing. Okay, so that brings us to the three-blade wind generator, which has been promulgated across the landscape, and it doesn't work. And since my book Wing Project came out, I've gotten more and more feedback from people who have been associated with corporations, people who have taken classes at the university level regarding wind generation of power. And it's just amazing to me that nobody in these so-called industries have questioned what is going on. I talked a bit about that in my show last week. Okay, so let's look just at the major problems of the world. Water, energy, the issue of having a large human population accessible to outer space. That's why I started talking this show about what Musk is doing, what Richard Branson is doing, and other corporations putting space hotels up with their own money. And these are individuals and groups and small corporations who are edging in, looking at making a profit, taking some investment money, making a profit, and seeing that somewhere out there in that great beyond, there's a business to be had. So, at any rate, coming back down here to planet Earth, we have an energy problem. It can be summarized as following. We use way, way too much energy. This modern life is a energy hog. It's a resource hog. All of that energy then goes to consume resources. All of those resources are not necessary to live. Somehow, somewhere, somebody has sold a package of goods to the public, thinking that Western life is good. I mean, with all of this stuff, there is happiness, and that's not true. The Western world, I go around, I don't see happy people. Maybe you go to some different place than I go to, but when I go into the public, when I see the public, when I talk to people, I go to offices, I go to schools, I go to shopping malls, I don't see happy people. I see people who have a look on their face like somebody just slapped them around. That, go around, go to the airport, go to the mall, go to shopping centers, go to schools, go to whatever you want to go to. I don't care what you go to. Look at the people, and they don't look happy. Like I say, they just look like people who just been kicked down the block a few times, don't know where their future is, have no clue what's going on in the world or why their situation is the way it is, and don't know where to turn because their government is about to take every last penny that they will ever earn or their kids will ever learn, and some of them are so stupid they don't know it. Then you have the, I talked about this a little on John Moore's show Wednesday, yesterday morning, that the influx of illegal aliens and aliens who are getting citizenship in a legal manner don't understand what's really going on in this country. So the influx, which is fairly large, really is not a burden so much financially on this country, it's a tremendous burden, but socially, these people don't have a clue what the United States is all about, why it was formed, or what it's supposed to be doing. So they're primarily preoccupied with getting papers, with getting established, getting bank accounts. What good Americans should do, the only thing they don't understand is they are the new wave of slaves for the World Bank. And they're essential to cutting down the United States at the knees. the people who really do understand, and let me come back to just the normal population of the United States, with about 95% of the people in the United States absolutely clueless about what's going on. Pretty much anything can be done through so-called government as the facade. Okay, so let's get down to energy. The one of the main purposes, I had two main purposes in putting out the Wing Energy book. And if you haven't gotten it, I suggest you get that book. It's very important because it also describes how people have to start preparing for the future. The energy corporations, the ones that produce your electrical energy and gasoline energy and other forms of energy, natural gas, etc., are going to start to fail. They're going to have convulsions. The prices are going to go sky high. Then they're going to tumble down. It's kind of like a person that needs Valium to exist and keep stable. The energy industry is going to need some serious energy, Valium energy, because they're going to be zipping up to very high profits, very high prices, and then crashing down to almost nothing as this convoluted death of these energy corporations occurs over the coming years. You have to understand that corporations exist on, let's say, a 5% margin. So if they lose that 5%, they're all of a sudden they're in the red. They're not doing well. They're going out of business slowly. They're slowly dying. And in these, it's like an animal living out in the wild. If they don't have enough food, if they don't have enough water, if there are too many wolves around or predators, then that stresses their existence beyond, and all of a sudden, they just can't exist. They're living marginally as it is. A corporation is the same, existing on a 5% margin. So the issue is here that as these companies lose only that 5% margin, as people install solar panels, as people install even these LED light bulbs, that's enough to take away 33% of the energy production in this country. A good third of the electrical energy production in the United States goes simply for lighting. All of a sudden, people are putting in LED light bulbs. I just bought some the other day myself. Two-pack for $9, I forget where it was, and of the new LED 60-watt light bulbs. They're as bright as the old 100-watt light bulbs, and bright and white, and they're going to last for 20 years. And they take, instead of 100 watts, they're taking like 9 watts, a tenth of the amount of wattage to run those light bulbs. And people are installing these. That alone is enough to take the energy production companies to the cleaners because they're running on a 5% profit margin. They just can't, and then people start installing home energy systems, etc. These companies simply are not going to be able to exist. That's why it's important, for example, for Detroit and the oil gas industry to be in cahoots. If Detroit didn't put out gas guzzling cars and SUVs, then the oil industry also would start to falter, because if you could get 70 miles to the gallon on a car and you were paying $1 a gallon, the gasoline companies, because they have ramped up and they're depending on that huge profit, would have a tough time. All of a sudden, they'd be down to a 5% margin, too. Okay, so anyway, what does this have to do with the Wing Generator Project? What I want to do tonight is describe the future. This is very important to understand, because as the future comes, the people who jump onto the energy bandwagon sooner, you're going to pay more up front, but then you're going to save yourself from those fluctuating, exaggerated energy costs that are going to come down the pike here in the future. And so to do that, I want to talk about something. I actually bring this up a little bit in my book, Wing Generator, the Makani Wing Generator. I talk about geothermal energy. Now, what is geothermal? A lot of people, the original geothermal, you had to drill a hole deep into the Earth's core, and you tried to get down to where it was hot. And this is actually what they do in, like, Iceland, some of these early projects for geothermal. They got down to, because they have volcanic activity there, they've got a lot of extra heat near the surface that most of us don't have because we don't live in a volcanic zone like they do. But anyway, they would get down and they heat their homes with that. So all you got to do is pump water down there or some liquid, like a heat exchange liquid, alcohol-based, glycerin-based or whatever, and bring that back up, heat exchange in the house, and you can heat your houses with that. Just a very efficient way of heating a house by simply moving fluid through a pipe. But now what is becoming more popular, excuse me, is a form of heat exchanger that is around a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 efficiency. And let me explain how this works. You with a machine, you come in and you drill you go down to about 10 or 15 feet under the ground. You're about 10 or 15 feet under the ground, and you put copper tubing. You run copper tubing back and forth and back and forth, and then you hook these together and you bring it up into the house into what is called a heat exchanger. And what that has the ability to do is to take heat out of the ground and pump it into your house in the form of heat, and so as to heat your house. Or in the summertime, it works in reverse to provide air conditioning for your house. Now, let's say you have a conventional air conditioner, or let's say you have a conventional gas, propane, or electric, or oil furnace in your house, and you are burning that energy. Okay, now, if you burn electrical energy in the form of a pump, let's say you use X amount of energy to heat your house directly. That energy that comes in, electric or propane or natural gas or oil or whatever form of energy you use. Okay, what if you could triple the amount of energy you got out of that fuel? Most people would go, well, yeah, that's pretty good. My energy bill would go down, and I'd heat my house. It'd be comfortable, the same temperature we like. And by the way, the whole structure of modern society and the way houses have been built in the northern climates is crazy. They knew as early as the 1950s that houses should be built underground. And all of the houses that we have to heat all year long, and all of this wasted energy just to heat houses, and it goes through the walls and out into the air, into the ambient environment, all of this is wasted heat. And so it's really, there's so much energy that we can burn. And the problem is not just the fact that we're burning up natural gas or oil or oil derivatives or whatever, is that we're using oxygen. Hey, buddy, you need that to breathe. You know, the old human respiratory system, you need the oxygen to breathe. And so I've talked before about the diminishing returns on oxygen in our atmosphere, something that nobody talks about. But to drive your automobile down the road, do you know how much more oxygen your automobile takes than your lungs? A lot. You've got a air intake, you've got a carburetor that compresses that air as it comes into the engine, goes through the manifold, and it's taking an awful lot more oxygen than your lungs are to get your body from point A to point B. A lot of oxygen. And so to heat your house, the same thing. It takes a lot of oxygen. And so the whole issue here is that we cannot continue burning high energy content fuels. And this is one of the main points I repeat and I repeat in the Wing Generator Project, the World Energy Project book. I keep repeating, we cannot continue burning, and that includes nuclear, which doesn't use oxygen, but it converts inert matter, which previously was just sitting there in the earth. Then you process that. That's a big expense, process, transportation, and storage of the nuclear fuel before and after it is used. This is a very expensive proposition, and like when you take that nozzle from the gasoline pump, stick it in your car, you think, doggone, I'm paying $3.59 a gallon for gasoline. No, your price is about six times that. When you count the wars in the Mideast, when you count the devastation, the money, the expense, the everything else, the invisible expenses of using that, putting that gasoline nozzle into your automobile, the invisible expenses are probably five times that. But people don't understand that. So please, when you next time you fill up your car, open up the little door, unscrew the cap, stick that in there, and look at how much you pay. Okay, $60, $80, $100, $200 for some cars to fill them up with gasoline. Now multiply that by five. That's your real cost of putting that gasoline in your car, buddy. It ain't cheap, and it's not going to go away. And those costs are with interest on the national debt that are going to continue. You're causing that debt to fall on your kids' kids, and everybody after them. So when I talk about wing generation of large-scale production of energy, when I talk about putting these on houses on a scale that's necessary for a house, when I talk about putting these on ranches and farms that are sufficient to produce enough energy for that entity and maybe 10 others, and putting some back in the system for the people who live in the city, and then you start putting in generators that are 1,000 feet tall, and now I've described these before, I'll describe them again. Go online, get a picture of the Golden Gate Bridge. The towers, there's a tower at each end of the Golden Gate Bridge. These are 623 feet off the level of the water. 623 feet tall, these towers, and they support the ropes and the cabling and the tubing, etc., that support the Golden Gate Bridge. Those would be the equivalent of the support stands of a single wing generator, each one of those towers. Now, put a 1,000-foot wheel on that and line them with 200-foot deep wings that are geared into that Pacific wind 30 miles an hour, and look at the energy that's being produced there. You're going to be able to replace nuclear power generators one by one and setting these offshore. That's up the east coast of the United States, down along Florida, around any coastline in the United States. Put this onto our electrical grid and run all of our society. We eliminate gasoline, diesel for trucks, for big trucks. We eliminate the... Now, this is where I want to talk about also. Home heating is a major source of energy. This is where the geothermal comes in. Now, I started describing how you put the tubes under the house 10 feet deep. This is an installation project now that's costing maybe $20,000. With volume, these could be installed for $10,000. And all you need to operate this system is a pump. Very simply put, a pump. And so, and a compressor, which is another pump. And so to run these directly with wing generation power right at the source, right at the house, or with localized, or with electricity that comes from wing generation systems, now you eliminate natural gas, oil, electricity as sources of heating your house. And of course, there's always going to be some supplemental heating, geothermal doesn't cover it all. Now, let me explain what happens. Remember when I said, if you took the amount of energy that you take in your house to heat your house, that's just raw energy, it's converted into heat, it heats your house, it goes, the heat travels through your walls and out your through the windows, etc., and leaves and goes out into the environment. If you could take that amount of energy and double or triple it, would you do that? Most people would stand up and wave their arms and scream and go, yeah, let me be first. And that's exactly the case. That is the situation with the heat pumps. The heat pumps that go on the geothermal units, and all it takes is a pump. You run fluid through these tubes that are in the ground. They extract heat in the wintertime. They extract cold in the summertime. You run it through a thing called a heat exchanger, which is about a 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 energy advantage. It's like putting airfoil wings on an airplane. You get an advantage from this. And so try and fly an airplane with just flat wings. You're not going to do too good, buddy. You need those airfoils to make the whole operation work. Okay, so now that we're strapped with all of these houses throughout the northern climate that need heating in the winter, especially a lot of heat, and all of a sudden you can start using the heat that's naturally in the ground and give yourself a 2 or 3-to-1 advantage on the energy that you're using, that consuming normally, all of a sudden another big energy consumer comes down to a reasonable level. And all you need is an electric pump. Okay, let me describe the home scenario now. This is the new home, the home of the future, with the wing generators producing electricity. You drive home from work. Okay, you don't have to work 40 hours anymore because you buy your electric car for $10,000. It has no gas motor. It doesn't need an oil change. It's not going to need maintenance for a very long time. And since you're not going to work back and forth every day, because now you're living in a modern society that's well planned, that's eco-friendly, now you drive home, you plug your car in, it's getting energy from your local wind production, you're changing wind energy at your house, and you're charging your automobile. You have a set of batteries in your house. Now, the current technology in batteries really are batteries. Lead acid technology has come a long ways. Lead acid batteries now can last for almost forever because of a little thing they call desulfation, the removal of sulfur from the plates. The new deep cycle batteries have a big gap in the bottom of the battery underneath the lead plates. These are lead plates. If you ever look at them, they look kind of like a honeycomb to give them a lot of surface area. But underneath those, back in the old days, the early batteries didn't have any space there. So as soon as some sulfur started to accumulate, it dropped out of solution, out of the sulfuric acid that's in solution in the battery. As soon as that sulfur dropped out, it started to short out the plates and ruin the battery. The battery didn't work anymore. Okay, there's a process called desulfation where you run a high voltage spike and current backwards through the battery frequently though. And this basically takes that sulfur, puts it back into solution, and it revives it. Basically creates a battery that is not going to wear out because the thing that was the problem, the sulfate forming as a little salt basin down at the bottom of the battery, is no longer going to do that to short out the lead cells. So you basically have a battery that's going to last a very long time. And here's a system people think, well, these are very expensive. In the average household, and this is, by the way, I'm talking because this is what I do. I'm not suggesting that people go out and do something or pie in the sky or theoretical. I do this. I've been doing this for years. I don't have any grid. I don't have any electric. I don't have any utilities at all. Okay? And because this is how it's set up, the average household could have 10 normal deep cycle batteries. That's about $1,000 worth of batteries at about $100 a piece. These are normal 12 volt deep cycle batteries. You go in the battery store, get these, hook them together with specially large cables, hook it into either a 12 volt or a 24 volt or a 48 volt system with an inverter. You have your wind generation system, the wing system, like what I have personally. And, you have the ability to generate in a decent wind, a couple thousand watts. That's the equivalent of a electrical generator, like a motor powered generator. But the point is, you're getting this from a natural source. Okay, so all of a sudden, you look at the average household. Like I say, you're driving an electric car, okay, or two electric cars, whatever. You come home, you plug it into the socket. In fact, I suspect that there will be a technology that when you drive home, you drive into your garage stall, the plug will come out and plug itself in to your car. You don't even, pretty soon you won't even have to plug it in. You just drive into your garage. When you turn your car off, the plug comes out and plugs in. And you're generating, you're pulling energy out of your battery pack, out of the wind generator, or off of the grid, which is now being supplied by wing generation power at the level that the country needs, and additional power. So the other issue about the very large-scale wing generators is you put up enough to do about 150% of the energy requirement. So a lot of people think, well, you're always going to need gasoline. No, you won't need gasoline as a supplement. And the reason you don't is because as the demand for gasoline goes down and eventually approaches near zero, that gasoline would be very expensive. Plus, you have all the other mechanical parts of a gasoline motor to maintain. No, you get all the way off of that. You get all the way off. It's like weaning a baby off of the baby bottle. Now the baby is independent and can start to eat real food. And then you eat real food, you don't see adults going around with a baby bottle in the nipple in their mouth. That's the same thing. You wean the public off of gasoline. Get off of it. Forget about it. Goodbye. No more. No more gasoline motors. No more electric or gasoline or natural gas heating. Sorry, I don't think many people heat with gasoline in their house. I hope you're not doing that. But at any rate, wean the public off of these crutches, these high energy content inert fuels that are in an inert state, and then we burn them, whether it's nuclear that does not take oxygen, but it's still burning, in an inert subject creating heat. Get off of that, all of that. We have plenty of wind to operate all of our energy needs. And that is a simple reality. It's a simple reality. We have way, 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 way more wind energy passing by every day. I want you to go to the ocean sometime, or a big lake, or some body of water that's nearby you, and look at the wind. The wind is coming across that lake or ocean or big body of water, and it's coming in a straight line. Now, imagine one wing generator, 1,000 feet tall, that's sitting out there moving. Now, these are not spinning fast, mind you. They're moving slowly, but they're taking the energy in that wind and converting it into electricity. That electricity is pumped back to the shoreline at high voltage, mind you. It's producing high voltage energy, not low voltage, high voltage energy at the source, putting it back to shore, and that energy then is being distributed to the local area. Now, if we put no more than 150 of these around the coastline of the country, we would have enough energy to run the entire country. Electric cars, electric pumps for geothermal conversion of heat, lighting, manufacturing, etc. Let's put in 200. The cost of putting those in would be less than a single nuclear power generating plant. And remember that when we start shutting down these nuclear power plants, they're going to have to be decommissioned. You just don't turn the switch and walk away. All of the fuel that has been spent has to be accounted for, and every day they're producing more. The coal fire plants, etc., those you can just turn off and dismantle, take apart and use the materials for something else maybe. But the issue here is that in the conversion to electricity, to a purely electric society, we would be shutting down the major sources of energy. And I would say, though, that natural gas is probably one of the cleanest burning fuels. So converting, if we have other, there's going to be some other necessities in life. So convert to one of them. If people really need their gasoline engine, they can convert it to propane. It's a very easy conversion. But basically get away completely from gasoline. And the Koch brothers, maybe they can go fight about something else, about their millions of dollars that come from their refineries. But completely get away from gasoline and oil dependency. Stop burning those fuels. And this is the way of the future. So here's your house. Here's what your house is going to be like. It's your very same house. You're going to have a pack of probably 10, maybe a big house would have 20 deep cycle batteries. That's only $2,000. That's less than the cost of a new set of washer and dryer. You have an inverter, which is probably another couple thousand dollars, and some cabling, and you're done. Then the wing generator system, if you don't have one on your very own house, you're using public power, then you contribute to the well-being of, you invest possibly as a shareholder in one of the large offshore wind generators, and you're a owner, you're a part owner of that wing generator, and you get your energy for free because you're a stockholder. And look at the difference between that and the companies that are producing energy from burning high energy content fuels. In 10 years, in 20 years, in 50 years, they want to do the same thing. And every year they have to burn more fuel to provide energy for you. It's a dead-end game. It can't continue. Those companies will go out of business. And as they do, it's going to be a disaster for the person that is still on that dependency and has not switched over to some kind of investment into wind generation power offshore. So this is going to happen, and people are going to move to this very quickly. What's going to happen to the power grid? Nothing. The power grid is fully capable of handling this as is right now. The high voltage electric trunks that run around the country, fully capable of managing this energy. And the ticket here is that you control the voltage level for your computers, for your TV screens, for your printers, for your kitchen appliances, for your washer dryer, that they all run on 115 volt AC 60 cycle. You control that at your house. And so the energy that comes in does not have to be held at some magical voltage by the energy company. All they have to do, all that has to come in from the field, so to speak, is the energy that provides energy to store up energy in the battery pack. Now let me go a little bit into the future. In the future, you will have storage devices that are much better than the deep cycle batteries. You're going to have something called a capacitor. A capacitor is a static electrical device. It's basically, in the simplest terms, it's two metal plates separated. There's a material put in between them called a dielectric, and you store up energy by putting charge on those plates, positive on one plate, negative on the other plate, and that energy has the ability then to discharge that just like a battery. In a sense, they're interchangeable. The battery has many times an electrical construct, but you have to understand that many of the modern batteries are simply capacitors. They're solid-state capacitance devices, millions and millions of them built into an array that provide the electrical, what we call a battery. So in the modern way of looking at capacitors and batteries, they act very similarly. The thing about a true capacitor that is based on plates, the energy stored, it's a very simple equation, is proportional to the voltage squared. So the more energy that you store in a capacitor, it goes as the voltage squared. So if you can double the voltage in your capacitor, you can quadruple, multiply by 4, the energy stored. If you can multiply by 3 the voltage on the plates, you get 9 times the energy stored. So it's a very interesting concept. This implies that high voltage capacitors are necessary to store large volumes of energy. And so your capacitor in your house would probably be about the size of your hot water heater. And it would store the equivalent of probably about 20 to 30 deep cycle batteries. But it would be high voltage. So this would have to be in a controlled situation. But we already have dangerous things in our house. You have a tube coming into your house with natural gas. If that tube breaks, your house would go into orbit if a spark occurs. So we already deal with very dangerous forms of energy. You have a gasoline tank in the back of your automobile that if that baby goes off, it's going to take out a city block. So we already deal with dangerous forms of energy. So using a high voltage capacitor in your house that's properly protected is not going to be some kind of outrageously dangerous thing. Nor would the conversion of wind power into energy using a wing design that's efficient. That's the whole problem with alternative energy today, as I explain in my wing book, the Wing Generator World Energy Project book. I explain that alternative energy has always been just that. Alternative, kind of viewed as puny, insignificant, kind of a futuristic idea, but something that never would replace the energy sources that we're accustomed to, the natural gas, oil, gas, nuclear, that produce the bulk of our energy now. It is a myth. Let me say that louder. It's a myth. It is a myth that we have to burn high energy content fuels to produce large volumes of energy. It's a well-constructed, well-propagated, well-tailored, well-schmoozed myth that we have to burn high energy content fuels to produce large amounts of energy for our energy needs. Now, without the high cost of energy, most of the things you buy today, a hot dog at the ballpark costs $3 when it should cost a quarter. Most of the expense in there is due to energy, including the guy selling it to you has to heat his house too. He has to put gasoline in his car too. The guy that works at the meat production plant to make the hot dog has to put gasoline in his car. The production plant needs energy. You see how the energy bill, the transportation of the hot dog from the manufacturing plant, the cooling of the hot dog until it gets there, all of this is energy related. So the $3 hot dog in an energy efficient world is going to be 25 cents. You don't need that much money anymore. You don't need, you know, the best thing we can do is support farmers. And I'm going to interject a small note here. I'm very happy to see the increase in quality and quantity and availability of good organic non-GMO food. Find yourself a source, either a farmer direct or a farmer's market or a co-op or a store that sells good food, and support it. Pay a little bit more, eat a little bit less, and start realizing, you know, that you're not pouring all of these chemicals into your body. Support those businesses. They will grow. And all of a sudden, through just common sense and support, we'll start building up an agricultural business in this country again that supports the population with real food. What a concept. But the point is, I am looking into the future. What I'm looking at here is something that we will be able to do. This is all very doable. This is not theoretical numbers and that. No, this is all very doable. But the other thing I'm saying is that as this happens, and it's going to happen, it's already happening. As people are struck with higher and higher energy bills, they are desperate. They have to make a change, and they're going to, because they have to. They cannot exist financially under the burden. As the governments fail that support the energy and the bad management of water, and people become, they have to become independent one at a time. They have to get rid of this, the burden. As the states fail, as the states start increasing their need to basically take as much as they can out of the public, the states that keep doing that are going to fail. In those states that realize that they have to support the people and lower their taxation, some of the states down to zero, those states are succeeding. They're rolling in money because investment is coming in. People are going there. People are moving there. Corporations are going there. Why would you hire a company in a state with high taxation when you can hire and get the same product for 50%, and you know that all your money is going to the people there, not to some state bureaucratic system that's out of control? At any rate, this is happening now, folks, so I want to give you a positive note into the future. We have the Ebola situation. Be prepared to quarantine yourself. What is going on with Ebola, in summary, too little, too late. It's spreading. The news media is absolutely not covering this. I want you to also understand that my webpage, I still have the sale up. There's a tremendous savings on items on my sales page. The jmccsci.com webpage, just scroll down, you'll see the sales there. My, also, if you're planning on buying Christmas items, holiday items, please order as soon as possible. By the way, my show from now on, Thursday night, will be at the 5070 frequency, WWCR. That does not affect the Friday airing of the show, and I'm out of time. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.